my reporting for the last 8 or 9 years. I've taken a look at some of the largest and most influential hate groups and efforts to sow racial and ethnic division in political campaigns and public policy disputes. And I wanted to emphasize the role of powerful interest groups and donors in using racism and other ethnic appeals to divide and distract people so that solidarity is very difficult. And so these interest groups and political candidates or donors gain financially or politically by deploying racism or sexism or other types of bigotry in a strategic manner.
So what you're making me think right now, after what you have said, is the DACA students, because I am always following them and I'm trying to make stories, you know, get their stories on. And what comes to my mind is, oh yeah, they, in a way, they are dividing the immigration, you know, the Latinos, the Hispanic, around the wall, let's say, or immigration reform, or only the DACA students get, or the DACA young ones get to stay.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the DACA students have become a political football. Many of the American political donor class, they don't have strong feelings or any compassion for these students, but they see them as a bargaining chip in legislative disputes, that they can use the lives of these children to advance a political agenda by saying, for Trump and congressional Republicans, they're saying, you know, we're going to remove these protections and potentially move towards deportations for these DACA students unless Democrats come to the table and agree to our policy demands. So they've simply become a political football, and I don't think a lot of these political leaders are truly considering the impact these decisions could have on the lives of the students.
And in the future, tell me about the power of media. I remember last year you came and I came to your presentation. You talk about Trump and media. In other words, he's up there because of media.
Yeah, you know, Trump during the Republican primary and for much of the general election harnessed and exploited the corporate mainstream media's fascination with him and fascination with the political circus and theater that he brought. There's very little interest in a substantive discussion of the policy issues at hand in the 2016 election. There was much more interest in a tabloid-style coverage of insults, of invective, of inflammatory rhetoric. And that's, I think, largely because the profit-driven media was hoping for easy headlines, salacious coverage. You know, Les Moonves, the CEO and chairman of CBS News, spoke to investors during the 2016 campaign and said he's happy with what Trump is doing. He wants to see more Trump and less coverage of the other candidates. And I think that's because he appreciated the advertising dollars with very little interest in news coverage that served the public interest and promoted a thoughtful discussion.
Is there something we can do?
I think we need major institutional reform. There are many individual projects that have promised, but this is a big country of 300 million people. All people in this country deserve quality local journalism, quality national journalism, journalism that explains the major public policy issues that confront society and holds our public officials and other people in power accountable. And so we need major reforms to create new revenue streams to fund local journalism, to fund citizen journalism, to fund really quality, high-quality journalism that can help us function as a democracy.
During your presentation, you show us a little bit of the documentary that you did. And I was really touched by something that I need to understand a little more. And it is video games and how they come around and use this language. You know, now that we are at the university, young kids, young people, they use this to interact, to communicate, to play together.
You know, video games provide a wonderful community for a lot of young people and people of all generations. It's a way for people to connect, form kinship and community. But it's also an area where there's been kind of a social incentive to inflict pain on a perceived enemy. There's this idea of trolling that, you know, a member of a community can attack someone else and to try to provoke them and make them angry. So for this video game community, there's been kind of an intersection with white nationalism and other hate groups, because what's the easiest way to troll someone or to provoke them? And that's too many times using racist language or drawing swastikas or other types of hate symbols that can kind of provoke your enemies. So there's a kind of an interesting intersection between the video game community and white nationalist online communities. And that's, I think, I want to be careful to say most video gamers do not indulge in this type of thing, but it is a certain subculture that's very apparent online.